Red Eye is a program of alternative politics and culture which broadcasts live from 9 until noon every Saturday morning on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM and around the world at cooperadio.org. Here is Mordecai Breenberg.
Say the word Einstein. What first comes to mind? Is it the memorable and iconic image of his head and face? Or perhaps the equation E equals MC squared? But I doubt you were thinking about a man who lived in a racially segregated Princeton and how he dealt with that racism. Fred Jerome is a longtime science writer and journalist. On this, the 100th anniversary of Einstein's most famous scientific papers, we contacted Fred to talk about Einstein. Not the physicist, not the violinist, but the social values and political commitments and activities of Albert Einstein. Fred Jerome is author of a recent book called The Einstein File, J. Edgar Hoover's Secret War Against the World's Most Famous Scientist. And Fred has just completed Proofing the Galleys for a second book, which he's titled Einstein on Race and Racism. We reach Fred at his home in New York. Good morning, Fred, and welcome to Vancouver Cooperative Radio.
Good morning. Pleasure to be here.
Let's begin, but briefly, with a few things about the FBI file. J. Edgar Hoover's file was not really common knowledge. How did you first become aware there was an Einstein file?
Well, very quickly, I stumbled onto it, actually. I was doing research for another story on major media coverage of major science stories of the 20th century, and I was looking at Einstein as probably the most important, most widely covered story of the 20th century, and I stumbled onto a little article in the New York Times and section 4, page 17, right next to the weather map, that said that a professor in Florida had come up with this Einstein file, gotten the FBI to release it to him. And I was sort of surprised. I didn't know there had been such a file, and I figured most people didn't. So I contacted Richard Allen Schwartz down in Florida, and he said, come on down. And he gave me a copy of what he had, and which was about 60% of the actual file. And I later, with the help of the Public Citizen Litigation Group in Washington, was able to get almost the entire file released by the FBI after several years of threatening and cajoling and filing suits and so on. But in any case, even the 60%, when I was down in Florida in Richard Allen Schwartz's office reading through it, it was stunning to me. I was stunned, I should say, to see how much there was of Einstein's political dimension that I knew nothing about, and I figured most people knew nothing about. I don't know if that fully answers your question, but
how large was that file?
The file that I first saw in Florida was about 1,450 pages, and the FBI has put that file online. Actually, you can go on the FBI's website and get it, and you'll see all of the pages that are blacked out and withheld. The file that I eventually got from the FBI is 1,800 pages, and that's available on my website only. I mean, the FBI has not agreed to put that online, so I put it on my website. You can download it from there, and the website is www.theeinsteinfile.com, the Einstein file being one word.
What does the file tell us, not about Einstein, but about the approach and the methods of the FBI?
Well, the FBI kept tabs on Einstein for practically the entire time he was in the United States, which is, you know, some 23 years, from 1933 when he arrived, and he died in 1955. They tapped his phone, they opened his mail, they went through his trash, they even secretly invaded the home of his secretary's nephew in Boston, at first calling him into their office, and while he was in their office, they broke into his apartment. What's interesting about this is that they did it very routinely. I mean, it was like they got up in the morning, brushed their teeth, and tapped his phone. No warrants, no special need, no anything. And, of course, they did this with lots of people. The FBI had 10 million security files in this country. But somehow or other, Einstein seems to shock people that Einstein was one of them, and as it should, I think. I think all 10 million it should shock people.
Well, they kept this file. They pursued him all these years. J. Edgar Hoover, from reading your book, was really fixated about getting Einstein, but yet it never seems that they were publicly used all this information that they had gathered to try and pillory him. Why was that?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, about 80% of the file consists of lists of organizations that Einstein supported and joined. And he did join and support many, many organizations. And I think it's important to understand that. That is to say that he was not just outspoken politically and eloquent politically, but he believed in working in organizations. He believed change comes through organizations. So he'd join groups like the American Committee for Spanish Freedom, support for the anti-Franco struggle in Spain, the Committee of 1,000 to abolish the House Un-American Activities Committee, which was an important thing in his life, the Committee of American-Soviet Friendship, the Council on African Affairs, a very broad group of organizations, that all of which were sort of seeking to defend minorities, protect human rights, bring about a social justice in America, all of which were therefore considered dangerous by J. Edgar Hoover and the FBI. But Einstein wanted it publicly known that he lent his prestige. He sort of, as someone said, he used his great scientific prestige in the cause of his moral and political indignation. So it was he joined those and lent his name to those organizations with the idea that was a way of strengthening the cause. J. Edgar Hoover, therefore, was not too eager to have it made public that Einstein supported these organizations. So that, although that makes up 80% of his file, it was something that Hoover kept secret. In fact, he instructed his agents not to interview Einstein, not to interview anyone who might tell Einstein that this investigation was going on, because Einstein had a habit of calling press conferences and probably would have denounced the thing, and Hoover would have been the laughing stock of the world. I mean, can you imagine the FBI investigating the greatest mind in the world, the most famous immigrant in America, and so on and so forth? But Hoover's goal was, nonetheless, to try to come up with something that would nail Einstein, that he could make public, that would be so dastardly a deed that Einstein wouldn't be able to survive the publicity. And so he had in mind trying to link Einstein to Soviet espionage. And there's the rest of the 20%, the remaining 20% of the Einstein file consists mostly of Hoover's efforts to link Einstein to Soviet espionage, and it's a sort of an intriguing story, and I won't give away the ending, because then you won't read the book. But that really, if he had succeeded in doing that, he might have gone public with his attack on Einstein, and I think he might have. I can imagine him having dreams of his face being carved on the mountain of great lawmen somewhere in history, or something like that.
With John Wayne.
Yeah,
Einstein frequently is stereotyped, and particularly since his death, as a brilliant mind, a rather inscrutable and sort of absent-minded person. What is the function of that kind of propaganda image, which really sidesteps all of his social and political commitments?
Well, you know, Hoover considered Einstein. I mean, the ironic thing is that all of this all of this political activity is collected in the FBI file, as it does not appear in most of Einstein's biography. Most of it does not appear in any of Einstein's biographies or anthologies and so on. So it's ironic that if you want to find out Einstein's sort of the comprehensiveness of Einstein's political dimension, you go to the FBI file. And Hoover did that because he considered Einstein dangerous. And in fact, Einstein was dangerous to Hoover's America, which was an America of conservative law and order, right-wing racism. But to today, the way that they deal with Einstein, which is because I think he still is dangerous, and that America, unfortunately, still exists today, and maybe today more than ever before, the way they deal with that danger is by making him a saint. So one way of dealing with your critics, an Indian magazine that reviewed my book, said one way of dealing with your critics is to make them saints. And so they have created this image, sanitized, politically sterilized icon, sort of an absent-minded, twinkly-eyed grandpa. I mean, it's a great image. You have this professor genius combined with Dr. Feelgood, you know, hard to beat. It's just not true. I think that's the role of the image, is to silence his political impact.
Well, let's get down to the Einstein of social and political thoughts and commitments. As an overview, how would you characterize the fundamentals of his outworld outlook?
Well, he was an outspoken and eloquent critic of racial injustice, of U.S. militarism, a defender of immigrant rights. Perhaps his most important legacy was the civic courage he showed in urging Americans to defy the McCarthy committees and refuse to testify and refuse to cooperate. And he was a critic of capitalism. He was a socialist who, if I have time, I just read you this one quick quote about, if I can find it here, the media.
Go right ahead.
Under existing conditions, private capitalists inevitably control, directly or indirectly, the main sources of information, press, radio, education. And in another letter to Prime Minister Nehru, he said, "The general public here is so systematically misinformed that they are unable to hear any reasonable message." Those are just two of many such statements. But besides that, as I said, what made him doubly dangerous was that he believed in working in organizations. He was a joiner. He was a movement man, in spite of this image of him as a loner. And what made him triply dangerous was that he believed in planning action. That is, he didn't just joined things. He actually proposed plans for bringing about change. So at one point he made a speech proposing that 2%, if 2% of the draftees into the Army would refuse to go in, the armies would be totally unable to function. As they couldn't, there wouldn't be enough space in the jails to put just 2% of the people if they would refuse to go into the Army. It was a plan. It would have worked. It could have worked. And if there had been, my point is, he had a concrete idea of how to go about this. When he proposed that people not cooperate with the Un-American Activities Committee and the McCarthy Committee, he said people should be prepared to go to jail. And he said he himself was prepared to go to jail if he was subpoenaed. And that would have broken the back of those committees. It was a specific plan. So here's a man who today would say, look, we live, I don't know if he would say, let me say, we live in a profoundly immoral and profoundly criminal society in this country. I mean, we watch American troops on television torturing prisoners, And he see them rounding up and suddenly 3,000 rounding up foreign people, and suddenly 3,000 foreign-born Americans have disappeared since 9/11. And a lot of this is on television. We see the Guantanamo, almost the torture, but certainly the tortured prisoners. And, you know, what did you do, Grandpa, my grandchildren will ask, when all these terrible things were happening? And if you just sit there and watch it, you become part of it. And Einstein would have said, we need to act, and we need to act together, we need to act with a plan, and we need to act now.
Einstein lived through pre-war Germany, although he spent a lot of time in Switzerland, but Germany was the focus of a lot of his concerns, the rise of Nazism there. And then he emigrated to America, and he lived during the height of the McCarthy era in America. Did he himself make comparisons between the trends he saw evolving in Germany, which drove him into exile, and those that were happening in America?
He frequently did. I don't have all the quotes in front of me, but his letters in the 1950s are full of such comparisons. And he died in 1955, but from 1950 to 1954, 53, certainly, he speaks of it. I'll try to see if I can find you. Anyway, there are several times when he says the Americans are becoming like the Germans, and so on. And I think that what the difference probably was, because he had seen what happened in Germany, that he did join with others to actually speak out and call for people to take action to prevent that from happening in the States. Although he did that in Germany too, without much success, but he clearly heard the Nazi echoes, and I think if he were here today, somebody wrote he heard echoes of Germany in the 1930s when he was alive in the 50s, and today we hear echoes of the 1950s.
Well put. Well, it's been a pleasure speaking with you this morning, Fred. I know you're coming over here to a conference in Victoria, and I'll give people information about that.
Okay, I'm looking forward to that, too, I think.
All right. Well, yeah. Welcome to British Columbia.
Thank you.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I've been speaking with Fred Jerome. He's author of The Einstein File. And as he mentioned earlier in the interview, if you'd like to see the documents in the FBI file on Einstein, just check Fred's website at www.theeinsteinfile. Fred's new book, which will be available in July, is titled Einstein on Race and Racism.
You've been listening to Red Eye, a program produced by an alternative media collective in Vancouver, Canada. Red Eye broadcasts live every Saturday morning from 9 until noon and can be heard around the world at cooperadio.org.